all the games I used to play in my younger, wilder days, the game of clubs and tees.
Welcome into another episode of Turn Golf Podcast. I'm Andrew Putters, got my co-host Joe Nasa with me, and special guest tonight, Tyler Tambeline. Guys, welcome in, bring in right now. Tambo, just in general here, it ain't like we got much to talk about this week. Not much going on in the golf world. First of all, appreciate you coming on, Tambo. So you got some new stuff going on here this last couple of months. What we got going on?
Yeah, a lot, man. Excited to be back with you guys. Thank you so much for having me back on. Always fun chopping it up with you boys. And yeah, going from Canada to US, we got one open to the next. That was an incredible Canadian Open, just watching Nick Taylor bang home that 72-foot eagle. Definitely a fun week, but lots going on, man. Yeah, it's been busy times back here. It feels like the year just flies by, but a lot going on. We got, working a lot on things right now. ShipItNation.com just started a new venture. So talk about that for a second. Appreciate it again, you guys letting me go through it here. But ShipItNation.com, you can check it out. It's got all the major sports. So right now we've got baseball, we got golf, and then we've got MMA. We just picked up as well. We got tools, projections, content for all those. We got NBA, NFL, NHL coming up. The golf and MMA projections, I should say, are coming soon. We're working on them right now. Actually testing a second round of testing for PGA projections for the US Open this week. So see how we do with those. But very exciting times. Great little community over there. If you want to check it out, ShipItNation.com.
Good to hear. Yeah, I see the hat. Like the hat a lot. Joe, as once and all, our show is brought to you by rotoballer.com. Joe, what we got going on at Rotoballer here coming into the third major of the year?
Yeah, as always, man, we got you covered over at rotoballer.com. You can check us out over there. We got three different tiers of premium offerings. Also got a ton of free content. So we definitely want to encourage you to check the free stuff out. See what you think. We got an amazing staff, myself, Spencer Aguiar, Byron Lennick, Hugh the Model Maniac. He's doing some fun Rainmaker stuff over there. So we got you covered. DFS, bets, one and done, anything you need. Head over to rotoballer.com. You can use our promo code TURN. That'll save you 10% on anything you want to subscribe to on any sport.
Yeah, so first, before we get to the breaking news of last week that we're going to give, one thing I'm glad we got you on tonight, Tambo, because this is no better person to ask. Seems like Canada's still taking that social distance thing pretty serious after that putt was made yesterday, huh? Guy comes up to celebrate, gets form tackled. Either that or y'all need to pay the CFL players a little better up there because they've got security jobs on the weekends. Wild scene there, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think he was trying out. I mean, this is the one thing I will say. The tackle was incredible. I posted like every view on my Twitter because I thought it was incredible just to see the breakdown of it all, like the different views, the Adam Hadwin point of view. There's another one that came out where Corey Connors is basically laughing and just making fun of him and then goes on to congratulate Nick Taylor instead of helping his buddy out. But what's forgotten? I think this is the biggest thing. Everyone's given the tackle credit for the security guard. Adam Hadwin held on to the bottle. I mean, we talk pre-show about NFL is going to be here sooner than later and all the sports that we're into, but some teams would kill for that ball security. I mean, that bottle security was very tight from Adam Hadwin, so not enough credit given to the Canadian there. But, yeah, I guess he's an unknown, man. They don't know who Adam Hadwin is like we do, so they just thought – I don't know who else they would think it was, mm-hmm. but in the end, he definitely got crushed.
He did have on blue jeans. Did see that. He did have on blue jeans, but Dez Bryant would have definitely said that was a touchdown for sure.
Yeah.
So, Tambo, Joe, I'm going to give y'all both 2 minutes each. breaking news Tuesday morning, LIV Tour, PGA Tour partnership, or what do you want to call it, the new entity. Tambo, you go first. What was your initial reaction for the first minute, and then where are you sitting right now with it?
I actually wasn't sure it was real. I had to wait and see, but then that started to roll out pretty quickly. I was like, okay, here's something, but I think it's just too soon to really talk on because at the end of the day, it's like even the players are saying today in meetings, I think Fitzpatrick was one of the guys that came out and said, like, we just have no idea yet what this is. There's other stuff happening. There's legal proceedings. There's lots that has to go on. It seems crazy to me. In the end, if it ends up happening, whatever that ends up looking like, I think it's still better for us as golf fans in the golf fantasy space, the golf betting space, all these factors. I would still think it's going to be a positive. But again, all the political stuff and all the stuff that goes with it, I try to not delve into that too deep. For me, we'll have to wait and see how it plays out. But in the end, I mean, it was pretty crazy news. The wildest news since the LIV Tour formed 10 months earlier, whatever it was. So definitely hard to, you know, something you will never forget. And if it ends up being the real thing, it's going to be something that just sort of shapes the future, but should be better for golf if there's more money behind it, like Rory had kind of wanted the whole time when he switched gears and said, it's not ideal that, but if the money's coming in anyway, let's put it to good use and grow the game. So we'll see how it shakes out from there.
All right, Joe, what's your 2-minute breakdown?
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I talked a lot about this last week, Andrew. Unfortunately, I was under the weather, so we didn't get to do a show kind of when things happen. But I've calmed down a little bit, cooled down a little bit. There's a lot of Jay Monahan hate floating around the house last week. And I still feel, you know, I'll agree with Tambo first off. I think at the end of the day, you know, a year, 18 months from now, it's probably going to be better for the golf fan. You know, I think more money and all the players playing against each other has got to be a good thing in the long run. Short term wise, I mean, I really feel for those guys. You know, guy Rory especially kind of just jumps to the top. You know, kind of going out, taking the lead, talking freely about what he believes in, some of his thoughts. Tiger as well, kind of on the tradition and history. I mean, these guys took bullets for the PGA Tour, and it kind of feels like they got sold down the road by Jay Monahan. But that's really all I'm gonna say. We could probably do a whole show on it, AP, and we may do that. But I'm with Tambo. I think in the long run, you know, putting all the political, moral, ethical stuff aside, probably be good for the game of golf down the road.
Yeah. For me, I'll just say this, like you said, good for the game, probably long-term for the money part. We're going to see a lot of more newer courses, probably we've never seen a lot more events. But at the same time, my question is, there might be, you know, especially in the next probably 24 months, we're going to see a lot of changing, because if you saw, and starting last fall, there was like an announcement every week of something changing down the road. And those, some of those announcements still haven't come true as far as we're going to have no cut events. We're going to have, you know, where are these elevated events going? I will say this, should be interesting to see. I don't think we're going to be seeing any of these guys anytime soon playing on the PGA Tour on a regular basis. That's probably pretty factual. So, I think this slows down all the nonsense that we have been hearing, and maybe we can talk just about golf going forward. So, but I did, if I can pull this up here, I might be able to do it later. I made a little funny shirt about our boy Monahan. There we go. Look at this. Check this out. That's my shirt I made as a little joke for Monahan. Of course, that was day one.
He's going to get a lot of this. Yeah, there's a lot of this going around his way. From the way it shook out, but
that was day one, though. That was day one. So we've cooled off from that. It was basically just a big corporate chess game. I think we've seen, I think I called it the succession meets billions in real life kind of feeling. But there'll be more about this stuff. Like you said, Tambo, we really don't, there's really no sense in even talking about it other than it's a huge announcement for golf. So Canadian Open, what is this? First person since 53, first Canadian since in the 50s to win?
69 like that. Years. I think it was 54. Yeah, 69 years took it to get the job done. And Nick Taylor is the man that comes through.
Yeah, yeah, it's great for your Open. So are we going forward? Are we going to be seeing them play at different courses every year, or is it going to be on a rotation? What are we thinking about that?
I think the stat was last week, like it's never played more than two or something in a row. I forget how it worked, because obviously at Glen Abbey in the past, I forget how many years in a row that one was, but it's at the end of the day, this one's coming back. This was like the appetizer for 2026. They're going to be back at this course, maybe, hopefully, with a new playoff plan, and maybe it doesn't go to a playoff, but man, that was painful to watch when you got 18 involved that many times. Like it's that whole Fleetwood and regulation really botched it completely and still made par. Like it's just a battle for that. It's not easy to make eagle there. He had to make a 72-foot eagle to get the job done, but it's like, are you going to be waiting around all day for that? So I think it will end on 9. I just thought, again, I know it's annoying at playoffs. We've been there to these events. We've been in playoffs. And if you've been live, it's awesome. And the atmosphere and everyone's running from hole to hole, if that's the case, but 18-9, at least something, like at least 9 gave a chance, yeah, that it could have been a breakdown and be over. that thing was just dragging on and didn't matter how you played the hole. It just seemed like it was never going to end, but they said they'll be back here in 2026. So other than that, I didn't think it was too bad. It's just that hole at the end.
Yeah. I think for me, especially since I had some pretty fond memories of the Glen Abbey track, was awesome. What, you know, the three par fives and last, what, six holes, seven holes. So it was just it was a fun tournament there. And I love the golf course anyway. Exciting. You know, they come out, shoot like 30 on the back and come back I was wondering about the rotation, if they were going to do rotation coming up with that now.
Played a lot harder too, this than what people had thought coming in. Like this course, everyone was saying, you know, 20 under, it's going to be easy, this, that, and the other. And then it came out. I mean, we'd be talking on Wednesday shows. It had come out that there was a little bit more news that this place is going to play a little tougher than you think. And realistically, 17 under got it done in the playoff. Like that's what you had to get to. But I think there was only five guys over 11 under that were better than 11 under or something. So it was like, it really did play much tougher than people thought, which I thought was interesting after how it looked going into the week. They kept the rough up though.
Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty, the rough was very brutal, very penal. I saw. Let's go on to the tournament we got coming up. Pretty big deal here. Father's Day weekend every year, US Open, 123rd plan. It's at LA Country Club this year. LA Country Club looks like it has not hosted a pro event since 1940, which was formerly known as the Los Angeles Open. It was the host of it for 5 years. In 2017, it looks like after the redo there, they played the Walker Cup there. This course is very unique. First time we'll see Bermuda grass on a U.S. Open track since 2005. I could not believe that when I heard it. 7,400 yards, a little more than that. Par 70, greens are going to be stupid fast. Designed was George C. Thomas, 1927. Gil Hansen, though, was in on the restoration of this place. So, what do we know? I mean, there's very little to know on the outside. If you're just following the internet, we have to hear what other people have to say and what, you know, other content creators bring to us. But what do we know, Joe, you first, give me a little something about this course. Cause I don't know anything other than it's LA Country Club, the North Course.
Yeah, man. That's kind of what the big thing this week, it's almost about what we don't know. We know the Masters every year is going to be at Augusta. The PGA and the US Open and the Open Championship are obviously on a rotating venue basis, and most of the venues we've seen in the past. LA Country Club is something totally different. So we're kind of making educated guesses this week, which makes things interesting. By all accounts, this is going to be kind of a more modern top setup for US Open than kind of what we've seen in the past and what we've come to know. The fairways are a little more generous than traditionally we've seen. You know, I've heard a lot of people talk about, you know, Southern Hills. Gil Hance did the Reno there. Also did Brookline where last year's US Open was. So I think there'll probably be some similarities there. Same architect as Riviera, but I don't expect a lot of similarities to Riviera. Massive elevation changes, you know, crazy greens, crazy bunkering, a lot of ravines that run throughout the golf course. That'll be something that we're probably sick of hearing about by the end of the week, are these ravines that run throughout LACC. So to kind of answer your question, what I'm targeting, man, you know, kind of tried and true US Open producers. I don't care what anybody says. This is still going to be a very, very difficult test to golf this week. And we know that US Opens oftentimes come down to mental toughness as much as physical skill set. So I'm looking for guys that have tried and true proven players in US Opens. Good recent form, I believe, is going to be important. And, you know, don't want to discount length this week. It's par 70, but I think length's going to play an important factor as always, it seems like in majors. But interested to hear what Tambo has to say about LACC.
Tambo, real quick, what is Tifway Bermuda grass and how is that in California?
Don't ask me that question. That's not my
just kidding.
Yeah, I can promise you that. I don't even know what it is in general, let alone in certain places. So I can tell you that much. But funny enough, I mean, the way Joe just broke it down, I actually don't think that's how others are breaking it down, but I tend to agree quite a bit with how Joe said it. And that's, I mean, some people out there for sure saying it, that there's no real similar courses. And I agree all that. Like it's taking pieces from all these other top venues and then putting it all together. But I think a lot of people are looking at like, oh, this is a, some people say, oh, this is a totally different type of US Open track. It's going to be a second shot course. You place it in the fairway, the fairways are wide, and going from there. But when you're hearing people that are actually at the course now, and you're getting some of that information coming out today, they're saying, no, this is a classic US Open. It's going to be a lot different than what people are saying. Like it's, there's still a ton of strategy to it. Where you place it in the fairway is going to matter. You know, setting yourself up for that second shot, still true, but you still have to have that off the tee. And then, like you said, still going to play longer, still going to play very fast, firm, tough, all those things. That, so again, we'll see how that shakes out. But I guess when we get into sort of like some of these players and the tiers, if the ownership's going to be all condensed on the same guys, it seems like there is other guys that are going sort of in that, you know, 8 to 12% range right now that you can easily get big leverage on in this field, that are just guys that typically come through at US Opens. And it's just always been that way. And I don't see, I don't know, one course. And even if it is way different, I just, it's still to me a US Open. Everything I'm hearing on site by Wednesday, maybe we'll hear different, kind of like last week, if you will, because last week was what I said. We heard 20 to 25 under. They're going to tear this place to shreds. By the time we got down to the week, oh, they're actually not cutting the rough. We had a, you know, industry favorite, Jeff Feinberg, down there, you know, out there. He was saying, it ain't what you think. It's going to be this instead. And I talked to this guy's caddy, and I heard all this. That's the nice part about nowadays. We're getting a little bit more information from a little bit more inside the ropes. And that's always a nice thing to have. Helps us out, because as much as we think, oh, everyone's listening to the same stuff, that's in our bubble that that's happening. But there's a $25 Millie Maker this week. I can tell you, my buddies are all chucking a lineup into it. So again, those add up as people are going throughout. Could they get lucky? Sure. I'm just saying, but in general, they're not, you know, ears to the ground trying to find out all these little extra tidbits and things like I'm trying to find out and put out there for the people. So I think in general, just classic US Open, and it's going to be fine. Where you're going to have to get different, I think, this week is all going to be in that 7,500 and below range. That's where the ownership seems to really be just sort of congregating on two to three, four certain guys. And there's so many guys down there that you could play. And to Joe's final point on this rant is the length. That's always a thing. But when you get down to that range, some to get them through the cut. We got to get them to grind over the weekend for us. The placement points become so much more important in DFS, because the guys at the top will be up at the top. You know, you have to mix and match your guys. But at the bottom, you just take what you get. Go back to the PGA Championship. It was Cam Davis, I think, and Kitayama, Straka. Guys like that that just found their way up the board on that final day. And that means all the world in your lineups with those placement points you get with them.
Yeah, we've just to kind of follow up on what Tambo said, we've seen placement points really matter in US Opens in the past.
Yeah.
Because, you know, scoring can be so difficult. So definitely agree with what Tambo says there. I mean, it's something we can talk about when we get into the slate. But I do feel like when you do have some unknowns, as we do this week with this golf course, this is the absolutely perfect time to kind of fade the chalk a little bit, you know, to get away from the groupthink, get away from the popular plays. It's something we have to do anyway to take down a large field GPP. But when we have a lot of unknowns, such as we have this week, that's the perfect week to look for pivots. So I love your thought process there, Tambo.
Yeah, should be good this week. I think that's the key. Another thing too, I will say, last thing, just, and I'll kick it back to you, AP, is just the chalk up top is, you know, probably going to be better than the bottom. It is that way almost every week, but just at least in general at US Opens, it's typically been that way as well, because we know the mold. Like if you continue to play Xander and he continues to put up fifth, sixth, third, fifth, seventh, it's just continuing to hit 14th at the last one. You play Hideki at cheaper prices, he's putting up second, 16th, 21st, 17th, fourth. Like these guys are just the same guys coming through. It's all down low where you got to find that spot. And to Joe's point, it's always a good idea anyway to try and get off that stuff if you can, off the chalk down there. But this week especially just makes all that much more sense when you have a course with a lot of unknowns as well.
So who's our horse this week? Scheffler, Rahm, Brooks. That they're perfectly priced, I feel, especially with this type of golf course coming up.
Yeah.
That's just, is this too much money to pay for them? What's your thoughts on these three? I mean, they are definitely the cream of the crop, right? When we're talking major championships, none of them back down. It does seem like that Rahm is trying to find some stuff out there, and Scheffler can't make a four-footer. So where are we at on these? And then we don't really know what Brooks is doing other than he went on about a 9-day bender and goes to every playoff hockey game. So, Tambo, where we at on these three horses right here?
The Brooks clapping video that actually wasn't, I thought at first it was on repeat and it was not. And he's just sitting there clapping for 22 seconds or whatever at the hockey game. That is some good stuff. But yeah, look, if Scotty doesn't find a putter, he doesn't find a putter, but there's absolutely no way. And I don't care what his ownership gets to. The one thing I will say, the nice part is, I talk about this often, but this looks like his ownership will be kept in check. And all I'm saying by that is that when you add in Rahm and Koepka, and then we'll get to Cantlay, Hovland, all the guys below, the 9K range just loaded. What that does is just allows it for Scheffler to sort of sit in that 20 to 25 range, it looks like, versus him getting to a lot more. And I don't think anybody, we're in a new world of DFS. Nobody cares that he can't find a putter. Like, that's everyone just hoping that rankings off the charts. I bet some exotic today. It was a wire to wire Scheffler, 45 to 1. Just hope he finds it on day one and then never looks back. I mean, that's the way I think it would be to bet him versus 7.5 to 1. I know people that are just betting that number and that's it. They're calling it a week. They'll take it and go. 4 days of golf on a tough course like this, and some of the comparisons and all the thoughts and just how good he's playing. He's too good for me. I let Brooks punish me at these things. It just happened again at the PGA Championship here at 10-8. It'll really punish me because of that. But what I do is a little different. I'll say it, AP, just so it's, you know, transparency is the key, right? But Scotty for sure, heavy. Rahm would be next for me. What I'll do is I like to have my 2v2s up top. I take my stands, especially in strong fields at majors. To Joe's point, just if you can get off some of the chalk down there, just take your stands on the guys you believe in for this event. Let them mix into your pool. And so if I land on instead of a Rahm and Spieth, maybe I get a Brooks Koepka and someone up from Spieth, whether it's Morikawa or Homa or whatever. My point is that that's just a 2v2. I'm going to be way underweight on Brooks, but if that happens, I got no problem with it. And the last thing I'll say is the other factor for these guys and their ownership up top here, people love the balanced builds at the U.S. Opens. They cannot get comfortable with the guys down low. There's even a loaded 7K range this week, 7 to 7.1K. Added Emiliano Grillo today to get them to 16 guys just from 7 to 7.1K, let alone the rest of the 7K. So you can definitely build lineups with these guys. They're not too expensive. They're, you know, the way Scotty Scheffler is playing it, you could argue maybe too cheap, but they just have to price them somewhere. But in general, the way he's putting makes people think it's in line. So I got Scotty, Rahm close behind, and then Brooks down from there. But I know people that argue for Brooks because look at the numbers, man. It's just the numbers don't lie. And he's coming off a major win.
Yeah, I think you're my man Joe here probably has a Brooks tattoo somewhere on his body. So where are you at on these three?
I believe it,
Joe.
Hey, man, I love Brooks. Glad to see him playing well. Golf's better when he's playing well. So fully expect him to play well this week. I don't know. That kind of circles back to the unknowns we're talking about. I don't know that this golf course is going to suit his game as well as maybe some other U.S. Open layouts we've seen in the past. I fully expect him to play well. I think, you know, his almost boring style. We've talked about this on here before, AP. When Brooks is really clicking, he's almost boring to watch. And that translates really well to U.S. Opens. Obviously, he's a two-time U.S. Open winner. So I look for Brooks to play well, but I'm in lockstep with Tambo as far as the order. Really like Scotty Scheffler. I mean, it's kind of beating a dead horse, boys, but if he does find the putter this week, he's going to be really hard to handle. I mean, he's playing that well from tee to green. Guy hadn't finished outside the top 12 since last October. And we know about all the putting struggles. So if things do click, which that's a big if, you know, Scotty Scheffler could, you know, I could see it being one of those just dominant type weeks for Scotty Scheffler if things get going. John Rahm, I feel like public sentiment's maybe a little bit lower on John Rahm than it should be. This is a guy that gained 9.6 strokes on approach at the Memorial. Just an absolutely horrible putting week. Lost over 5 strokes putting at the Memorial, but 9.6 strokes on approach is nothing to ignore. And we've seen, you know, elite iron play from John Rahm this year. That's been the big difference in his game. In my opinion, it's kind of what has propelled him to play so well and so consistent is that improved iron play. So shouldn't sleep on John Rahm this week. And like Brooksy too. I mean, like Tambo said, you know, he's just going to make you pay. It feels like if you bet against him in majors.
Yeah. It's hard to go off Brooks, man. I will say that. It's just one of those things. It's always been that way for me. So I feel like if you're committed to the other guys, like I am with Rahm and then Scheffler right now, it's really tough to get to all of them. And then the 9K range is a conversation of its own. So I think that's where the struggle lies. But if he ends up in some 2v2s or something like that, I got no problem if I land on Brooks and maybe get lucky with my favorite guys at the bottom. But I'm definitely taking my stands down low versus up top. It's just really tough to tell with those guys. And even the Rahm thing, quick, I think it was Memorial, he T16. And I think it was Saturday, he lost like 3 strokes with the putter himself. And everyone was expecting a bounce back. It did not happen. We ended up, jokingly, we got the Scotty versus Rahm battle on Sunday, but it was the fact they were way back in the pack in the sense of, you know, where you would think they'd be at the top of the charts. They were back and Scotty dusted them. Again, Rahm just did not have a good outing, but still, for John Rahm on a course that, you know, a US Open in general, I mean, this is just definitely a spot you could just see him out there doing the same thing. So hard for me to get away from either. And he could get squeezed here because Scotty's for sure getting the ownership. Hovland, Rory, X down below. Koepka will get some just because obviously what's going on with him coming off that. Cantlay, California guy on top of the stuff down below, the other Cali guys. So I don't know. We'll see what Rahm's ownership comes in at, but I could definitely see it come in at, you know, 15% or something. No problem.
Yeah, man. I mean, we know how strong recency bias can be, especially with the general public. So I think of the guys above 10K, Rahm's probably, as you mentioned, Tambo, probably the most likely guy to see that ownership slide where you can maybe come in the side door a little bit with him, which I really like.
Okay, so moving on down, 10-3 to 9 is probably where there are a lot of arguments will go on in everybody's brain across the world playing DFS this week. My stance in this range actually is kind of the California play. The Morikawa, Cantlay, Xander, Homa, I'll be highlighting those guys. And, I mean, Hovland's been playing great, right? So I'm kind of Xing those rest of those guys off, nothing against any of them. But I like the California play this week at this golf course. Thoughts on that? This range, Tambo, you first.
All right, yeah, that's the one thing I'm monitoring here. For whatever reason, again, ownership projections will keep an eye on them as the week goes on, but I don't know how it's going to actually shake out here. I can't put my finger on it. Like Rory at 900 just has to get some ownership, I think, but the problem is that and have that number. And then Xander with his record, I mean, Xander just looks good no matter what. Xander's floor ceiling combination, he's definitely the chalk at 9,600. He's going to have ownership, but isn't it for good reason? Again, look at the results, fifth, sixth, third, fifth, seventh, 14th. It's any type of course, any style, doesn't matter. He can have a bad start at the Memorial and then still come out and have a good finish. I think it was fifth or something. So little things with Xander's game that you just can't ignore. At 9,600, you have to find ways to get different. It's not necessarily who you play, how you play him. I talk about this all the time. And then you can get him in there, just then be creative with the rest of it. Or if you have stands down low that are unique, you're fine anyway, just to use him. But Morikawa, I like. I think people are worried about these back spasms. We'll hear more from him as the week goes on. One thing, I think it was Mayo was saying it, and I definitely agree with him, is that back spasms, he's forced to WD. I know he was in contention. That's what worries people, but you have to pop up on you. It doesn't matter that it's the last day of a tournament that you're in contention with. You're not able to go out and golf. It's just that's you're injured, but they can also go away. And we'll be at 2 weeks almost, or just under 2 weeks when we get to this event. So if he's fine and getting in there, you never know what can happen. Again, it could lock up on him again, but it's hard to say. I think we'll know more before we go into it, but I have no problem risking it. I like that call, AP. And then Fitzpatrick is another guy that I'm just keeping an eye on, obviously coming off the win last year. You talk about Brookline, all of that, but I think Spieth is the one that most are going to hear. I'm hearing a lot about it today, people betting him. I think the ownership is going to increase as the week goes on, and he has won a US Open. He was very surprised himself, by the way, if you recall, to even win that US Open, because he thought DJ had the thing locked up. It was Chambers Bay, and then comes out and ends up not even in the playoff. That would have been the crazy Monday 18-hole playoff before they got rid of it. That would end up being, I think, the last one. So, besides that, you know, miscut, 65th, miscut, 19th, 37th, getting all the love because the fairways are wide. He's playing better golf and all that. But when you've got Fitzpatrick, Morikawa, Homa, Xander, guys like that around him, I'm still comfortable going to that. Like, I would play Xander at his ownership versus if it's 22%, let's say, I would rather play Xander than I would Spieth at 18 or 19. If I had to pick, you're allowed to play both. You don't have to pick. I'm just saying that's how I think of these things. And so that, you know, is sort of where I stand right now in this range, but not so sure on like Homa. Just, you know, just he says he's going to be better at this one. Never seen it yet. Might continue to play wait and see. Hovland picking up the extra steam. I'm really interested where, you know, Joe, if you want to take this maybe first, but like, where do you think Cantlay comes in at? I would have thought he's always popular at these things, but then when you got Hovland, Rory, Xander, does he get, and Brooks right above him, is there any chance he gets squeezed at all? Because that would be at least a little bit more interesting, regardless of his records. I mean, 14th, 15th, the last couple of years are not bad. And then the California angle, like AP said.
Yeah, I think that's a good call, Tambo. I mean, because we've, you know, we've got 10, 12 guys here that we know people are going to play. We know people are going to play Xander. Rory's going to get his ownership, you know, that kind of just comes built in with him no matter what. You mentioned Victor Hovland, who is really tough to ignore how Victor Hovland's playing. He's going to get his fair share of ownership. And then you got the three big boys up top. So, you know, Cantlay makes sense to me as the guy that maybe is the odd man out up here. People do like playing Cantlay, but especially in major championships. I mean, if I'm picking a guy above 10K that I'm fading, it's probably going to be Patrick Cantlay. So, you know, I could totally see him kind of getting phased out into the nines. Tambo, you mentioned Xander. You talked about something not a lot of people talk about on pods and stuff and in articles, and that's floor. The DFS floor is just so good that it makes me think Xander's good chalk, you know, in these spots because, you know, a T10, a T14, he just doesn't go out there and miss cuts in this environment. So really tough fade. I'm willing to swallow chalk on Xander there. Really like him. You mentioned Spieth getting steam. I think that'll continue throughout the week. I think we'll see him continue to get kind of steamed up there. And a guy that I don't think you guys mentioned who I really like this week, I think is starting to play like the 2022 version that we saw, and that's Cam Smith. He's an explosive player. We mentioned kind of the generous fairways here. The same thought process we maybe use with Spieth applies to Cam Smith, I feel like. He's going to have a little bit more room to operate off the tee. We know he's a world-class scrambler and putter. And we started to see some of that explosive scoring ability come back. Saw it there late in the PGA Championship. He's played really well in live events for whatever that's worth. But, you know, maybe my favorite wild card, if we're talking about a GPP play, a lot of chalky guys in the 9K range. But I like Cam Smith here, guys.
Yeah, too. Before we move on down, I just realized that this is a West Coast bent green. Bent green on the West Coast is not that normal. You usually see Poana or Bermuda, and fast bent at that, fast and firm bent. I know we see those Northeast courses will have that grass, but should be something a little different for this tournament anyway. Moving on down through here, 8K range. Here's your bombers, boys. Aside for just a couple. Are we just going to quit talking about DJ being in the 8K range? I mean, this is so sick, right? I mean, JT, Hideki, DJ, J-Day. If this was, you know, 5 years ago, we'd be licking our chops here with these guys. But where are we at in this range, considering we're going to be using so much firepower on the front end, possibly going two guys above 9,500?
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? Like you said, if you're going heavy up top, it's harder to get into this range. One thing I talked about a little bit today, did a little first look on the Ship It Nation YouTube channel with Hoop and just went through it. We were messing around, and I do this with Mayo on the Wednesday show. We go, and we'll actually build some lineups, but it's uncomfortable. I can tell you this right now, but if you go like a Rahm or a Scheffler and then hop down to like a DJ Day somewhere in this range, you won't be able to play the range that everybody else is on. You will have to find some guys down a little bit lower, but that's 7K, so sort of 6.7 to 7, as much as people won't like what's below that, there's definitely plays that you can find in there and make a case for that's not that much different than the guys at 71 or 72. We like the guys on paper at 71, 72 more, so I just think even if you are going guys up top, you got to, again, the FOMO of skipping over that entire 9K range of Rory, X, Spieth, Fitzpatrick, Cam Smith, those types of guys, it's tough. Or even Hovland, if you got to skip over that, if you're going like Scheffler down to the 8Ks. But it's really, if you're going Scheffler, most people are going 4 or 5, 7K guys. I'm saying you could hop into this range and then, yeah, you got to get a 6K guy or two in there. But if you go to the top of that 6K range, you could still make a lot of things work. So for me, I can't ignore the 8K range. Obviously, it just means I'll likely have less of it, but that's okay. I don't really love that much in here. I like some of the guys you mentioned, AP. I got Decky. I got DJ. I've come around a little bit more on Jay Day. Again, you just go back to the classic record. It hasn't been great lately for him at US Opens, but his game hasn't been great lately. It kind of just bounced back. He went on almost like a Spieth downward, again, at a different age level, of course, but he kind of went down. You're like, is he going to bounce back? Started finding form. He started putting up results. He started getting closer. Then he gets the win. So yeah, he's cooled off a little bit beyond that, but just in general, still at 8,100, he's below the average price. So taking a risk there, but the DJ Hideki plays. And then this is, again, people, he's dust. Everyone's going to tell you Dustin Thomas, not Justin, dust, because he's so bad right now. But in general, at 8,700, I don't even like the 50-1 that some people are posting on Twitter that you can bet him at and just say, oh, it's auto bet. If he wins, he wins. But at 8,700, this is what people forget. He does not have to win for me. There's a lot of ways he can fit into lineups here. And JT's track record at US Opens is not too bad in its own right. I think it's 8th, 19th, 37th. The last few, he's got a 9th before that. He's a guy that can definitely pop. And if any Southern Hills stuff gets brought into it, we saw there. I mean, the guy looked like he was running away with it, then fell off completely. We saw in the Netflix documentary, ended up having allergies and stuff like that, but then bounced back on Sunday to find his way into the playoff to beat Will Zalatoris. So I don't know. Maybe if people are going to be, if JT's sub 10%, like what it looks like right now, I have no problem. I like that better actually than the betting market, and just play him to play in DFS. He can score. He can grind it out, find his way into your lineup there. So I like him for that reason.
Yeah, you're right. A700 does not have to win to, he's not like, Scotty Scheffler. If you play him, he's got to finish first or second. Right.
Feels that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Joe, we've already, like I just asked Tambo, I said that, you know, if we go two up top, we'll miss this area completely with our remaining salary. Is that maybe where we need to kind of land in here maybe a little bit harder, because we'll be doing maybe not what everybody else is doing? What's your thoughts on that, Joe?
Yeah, I think I think the 8K range is a chance to get different with your lineup construction. I mean, it's really weird, man. The 8K range in these majors are oftentimes where we see a ton of ownership kind of pull up. It goes back to the balance build. I think Tamo mentioned earlier, people love playing balance builds in majors. You can get so many, big time names in there. And if we look at the ownership right now, it just doesn't seem like it's going to quite shake out that way in the 8K range this week. I mean, Tamo mentioned you got a potentially sub 10% JT. DJ people have kind of been there, done that, aren't real interested. Shane Lowry and Sung Jae, guys that have kind of fizzled as of late. Cameron Young seems broken. He's a guy that in the last 5-6 major championships we've seen get a ton of steam. He'll be, 5% or less this week. These are very talented players that maybe don't have everything clicking at the moment. But are certainly capable. I mean, just if we just want to circle Justin Thomas, if we start talking about, the dozen guys that you feel like can really win an event like this, JT's in that group for me. I'm kind of a JT apologist, but I'm more than willing to hop on at 8,700 at 10% or less ownership. So I think it's a good point, Andrew. That normally the 8K range is where we're going to find a lot of our chalk, but on this slate, at least right now, it feels like it's maybe a range where we can find some pivots.
Yeah, I like it. I don't know which broken player in this range we need to pick on, but maybe we can slide a few out of here and take home some big numbers. Moving on the 7K range, what we always say this week, this is where DFS is won and lost in the 7K range. And like Tambo's already alluded to, ton of people between 7,000 and 7,900. Too many to mention, really. Do we need to kind of break this down as far as like in like three sections, like the high sevens, the mid sevens, and then like 7,100 or less? I mean,
we're pushing almost 50 guys in this race. Yeah. I think it's, I got 43 on my sheet. I deleted some, I think. So I don't know. Maybe it's over that, but it might be around 43. So just to give you an idea, I think 7,500 and up, though, is sort of the way to focus on it, because if I'm looking at it, you see Fleetwood, who looks like he's going to get big ownership. You see Rose. A lot of people actually talking about Bryson at 7,600, how he's rounding into form in his own right at certain events and playing some stuff and getting better and healthier and skinnier and all these stuff that they're talking about with him. And then you got Fowler, you got Adam Scott, you got Wyndham Clark, who's played well in these big events. So this is where it looks like the ownership is going. And that's why, AP, to your point beforehand, like it only really it looks like Hatton and then Finau, Decky, DJ a little bit in the previous range, but a lot of that 8K range is the dead zone besides mainly Hatton. And then it's all setting up 7,500 and up and a couple guys down below. But this upper 7K is what you said, where you go to win and lose tournaments this week, it's definitely going to be in here. Getting it right or getting off it completely maybe is the answer in the end.
Yeah, so Joe, let me ask you this. You know, we talk so much in golf about, or in DFS, especially about, you know, strokes gained approach and everything, or proximity approach on certain yardages and whatnot. I kind of feel like, you know, hitting the driver pretty good and chipping and putting is going to be pretty important. And not that we can throw away the proximity and all that stuff and the strokes gained approach. Do you see that strategy at all viable for us in DFS? And if so, or if not, where are we at here in the 7K range?
Yeah, I think so, Andrew. I think it's a really interesting slate. Glad we got Tambo on, man, because he's one of the best at kind of diving in these little intricacies. But, you know, as content providers, you know, me, myself, writing articles, coming on podcasts and talking, we really like that statistical security blanket. We really like to be able to, you know, tell you guys, hey, this is killing it, gaining strokes approach, you know, we really love it, tee to green's great, you know, checks all the boxes. We really like having that statistical security blanket that we can fall back on, and this may be one of those weeks where we just kind of try to get away from that groupthink. Even though statistics are great, obviously they're a, you know, a wonderful roadmap and give us a guide into who's playing well and who can maybe succeed. But as Tambo mentioned, I mean, this 75 to 8K range is going to be overflowing with ownership. A lot of good player, a lot of plays that, you know, you feel good about clicking on because the stats are good, the recent finishes are good. You know, with the Justin Rose, with the Tommy Fleetwood, with an Adam Scott. I mean, these are good players, good plays. But it does feel like an opportunity to, you know, kind of shake things up in your lineup construction, go a couple different directions, maybe go against the grain a little bit. I mean, I think about a guy like Patrick Reed, you know, that maybe people aren't going to be as apt to play, because he is playing on the live tour. The statistics aren't as readily available. You know, a Sahith Tagala who never grades out terrifically statistically, and maybe the form, the finishes haven't been as great recently. I mean, I think those are a couple guys just in this range that we can look at to pivot to. Would love to get Tambo's thoughts, but I think, you know, there's a big opportunity to gain leverage this week, kind of with the group think that's going on and the hot spots of the salary scale.
Yeah. I think, you know, just to comment on that quickly, is that this is the group thing is that all the, that you just can just stay above 7,500. I know we said, like, you know, usually when we talk to the 8K, we say, like, oh, it doesn't seem like people are going to balance. It's clear to me that people are still going to get to the balanced lineups. Again, obviously they're going to have some Scheffler builds and things like that. But what's going to happen is it's going to be like Rory, Xander, and Hatton, or Rory, Xander, Hideki, or something. Like, they'll get to that. And so they pick up an 8K guy, but then you can almost land on Rose, Fowler, Scott, or something like that. And yes, that lineup sounds incredible on paper. We talked about floor, ceiling, all that. It's just then you got to have the win equity in there too. And if Scheffler just runs away with this thing, those lineups are all in big trouble. So there's that factor. And then secondly, it's like you said, all the ownership is up here. It's very clear, even on just the first run, because of those types of builds you could see working. And even in the Scheffler lineup, you just go Scheffler and then drop all the way down here, you could still get two of these guys, maybe three of these guys in, and then drop to the bottom to the other popular guys. Where I think you're going to pick up all the edge here is from 7,400 and down. There's only two, maybe three guys right now that I'm seeing over 5%. And that's not very many. So, you know, going from 7,400 down to 7K, I got the next math we'll do here. What is it? It's looking like 30-ish guys, give or take, just in that range. Yeah, 30 exact on my list, 31, sorry. So, you know, if only three of them right now are showing up over 5%, maybe a couple more pop in there. Maybe it gets to five total. That's where you can pick up all the leverage because there's so many guys in there that you can play. AP, you said you're rocking the cashmere Keith shirt. Keith Mitchell's in there looking sub 5%. You know, there's a lot of guys. Cam Davis, who people wanted to play and said he came back and got healthy and then wasn't. He looks good. Who else here? Let me just see. Talked about Sepp Straka. Just got it done at the PGA Championship, 7,100. Going down to 7K, there's a lot of guys. Minwoo Lee has a pretty incredible track record at majors and big field events recently. Like, there's a lot of guys down here that are coming in at 3 to 5%. These are where you make your stands. And like I said, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my stands down here. If I get these guys right, not only will I have huge leverage on them based on their ownership percentage, but I likely have a completely different roster construction. So even though I got Scheffler and someone else has Scheffler, if they've got it all busted up with 4-6s and 5-6s from some of the chalk that busted in the upper 7K range and my guys down here are crushing, that's where I'm going to pick up the extra. And that's what can find your way to the top of these large field tournaments.
Yeah. So as we move past 7K, the water falls out of the boat pretty quick here. Maybe 6,900, you might be able to find a few names. I'm having a hard time, and I'm usually a long shot kind of guy. I'm having a hard time looking forward to anybody down here. I mean, I know the names are good and stuff. I mean, Adam Hands had one, as Tambo called him earlier. Patrick Rogers, you know, like a vet, like a Strillman. I don't know, Brian Harman, Michael Kim's had pretty decent form lately. Can y'all find anything down here that's promising, that, or I guess more so is more reliable, let's say, than promising? I'll start with you, Joe. Is there anybody down here with any reliability at all? Especially, I'm having trouble, not necessarily with their past, but their recent form has just not been good. And then with that, I'm talking about like somebody like Mackenzie Hughes or Brian Harman that we normally would kind of splash in there, but maybe not this week.
Yeah, I think reliability is tough. It's a tough thing to target when you get down in this range, in this kind of environment, this slate AP. So, for me, I'm upside down here. So I'm willing to kind of, you know, push that reliability label aside a little bit in an effort to get some upside. And I love what Tambo said. I think that 7K to 7,500 range is a great way to go if you're looking to pivot. I think we're going to see a ton of like Scotty Scheffler with a bunch of mid to high 7K guys this week. That's going to be a very popular kind of core build. So if you want to pivot away from that, love that 7 to 75 range. A couple guys there, Justin Suh. Tambo mentioned a couple. I'll mention a couple. Justin Suh, I really like there. I think he's got all the tools to be a world-class player. Just haven't quite put everything together yet, but we started seeing a little bit in spurts this year. And another guy I like there, Harris English, I think you can take a look at. We've seen him play well in U.S. Open environments and in difficult golf courses. So just a couple guys there. But to answer your question on the 6K range, JP, yeah. It's definitely not as pretty as the sevens, but I think we're going to be, you know, we can take advantage of that in GPPs by coming down here. Not a lot of people are going to do it this week. So, you know, you start thinking, hey, let's think about some possibilities, maybe not certainties. Let's think about possibilities down here. Kurt Kitayama is a guy we've seen play well on tough golf courses in big spots. Adam Shanks having a very good season. Plays well on difficult golf courses. I think those two guys there, just under 7K, you can give a look to. Sam Stevens is a guy I had circled just because of his distance. You know, I think he's a powerful player. He's an explosive player. He's getting his feet wet on the PGA Tour, getting a little bit more comfortable playing in these big-time events. I'm telling you guys, I think we're eventually going to get there, but this Sam Bennett kid, I really, really like. He's tough. Grinds it out. I like his game. I don't know that I'd love him in birdie fest environments like he's going to see when he gets on the Corn Ferry Tour, the PGA Tour. But in these tougher situations, kind of like we saw in Canada last week, really like his ability to grind on these golf courses. So I'll have some Sam Bennett at 6,500. You know, they're Torben Bjornsson's another amateur. He didn't play well last week. But to answer your question, AP, I think there's some ways you can go down here in GPPs, but I wouldn't necessarily consider them reliable. It's more about gaining leverage and trying to target some guys with upside. Gordon Sargent down there, our boy from Vandy, shout out Sargent. Okay. Kind of blew up at the Masters, but you know, I'll have some GPP exposure again this week.
What do you think about the 6K range? You ready to throw some darts this week, Tyler?
I am, yes. And I like that he called that one out, because that was the best part of the event at the Masters, right? Was that everyone was talking about Sargent coming in. All of a sudden, Bennett starts doing his thing. Everyone starts looking the other way. But Sargent had to qualify to get into this one. He got in on one of the longest day in golf. He got in on the qualifier there. So good for him. And now he's back to do his thing again. So I think, you know, he's definitely a guy I can look at down here. But there's a lot of guys. You got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And you mentioned Sam Bennett. I like Sam Stevens. You also did mention him, so I'll give you credit. But I mean, that's the guy I was looking at. I think he looks pretty good. I always like Nick Hardy. Nick Hardy, 14th last year at the U.S. Open. So just if you think he can't do it, he just did it. So he can definitely be a guy that does it at 6,700. Maronk, I think that price jump is like the discount, almost $2,000 less than last week. Definitely a much stronger field. It's a major. I get all that. Just seems a little too drastic. So some bombers, Rogers, Buckley, Thomas Peters, Kitayama. These guys would all stand out to me that are guys that can do it. And then some grinders. Some of the grinders would be Harmon, Lucas Herber, and Matt Kuchar. And like I said, I'm taking my stand. So this is just, you know, some of the guys. I'm not naming everybody, but in general, this is the guys that I at least have a little bit of interest in. And then maybe we'll see about this guy, but Adam Schenck coming off of, you know, a pretty good outing. And he got added late because he got in at 6,800. So I don't even think, I bet you there's people out there don't even know he's in the field yet. If they didn't update their sheet or whatever it might be, I think that's at least somewhat intriguing. So yeah, no Hadwin. Of course, Hadwin will probably come out and win the damn thing after, you know, the big storyline or something, and just get insanely, you know, you can see the headlines now after everything that went on. But for me, few grinders, but mostly for me down here, looking at some of these bombers, the guys that just sort of fit that mold, and then go from there, because some of them just don't have the history. You're just not going to get it. Like Sam Stevens has been playing some pretty solid golf this year. He played last year, got 49th, but I think he's playing way better now than what we wouldn't even have known who he was mostly for the most part last year. I'm throwing some darts down here for sure, though. I got no problem doing that.
Yeah. You know, I thought at first look, you know, I'm always like a Peters apologist for some reason, but it just seems like he's just a heartbreaker every year in every tournament. And then I thought about Schenck too, because he's had some great finishes this year. I worry about him, you know, on I always thought maybe like really, really difficult courses he plays well. But then after doing some research, that just doesn't seem to be the case. So I'm just struggling where the darts are going to be. And reliability is my issue, because I'm a big – I'm more of a conservative, you know, chop the wood kind of guy. And you did, but if you ain't gonna win the pot unless your chip's in the middle, they say. So you'll be able to get down here and splash around a little bit. So we'll come here to the end. I'm actually gonna have three questions this week. It's gonna be our dart. Who's our dart play? Where's our heart at this week? And another special one. So first, Tambo, we'll go with you. Where are you putting your what's a big long shot for you this week?
Boys, this one's tough. I kind of like, man, I got to pick one. I was going to say Rogers, but I don't know. I just keep kind of looking back. Patrick Rogers, that is. I keep looking back at Minwoo Lee, though. I looked him up last night, went through a lot of stuff and bringing his stuff up. But just in general, these big boy events, he's been able to find his way and do it. So I'm going to say Minwoo Lee, like him to find his way around. Again, even if he's your last guy in or second last guy, if I want to put Rogers and Minwoo, you can do a lot with that combination and set yourself up pretty solid up top. But Minwoo Lee is who I'll say for my dart this week at 7,000 on DraftKings.
Joe, long shot.
Yeah, I'll stick in that range. Just because I really like, you know, kind of where Tambo is coming from there, as far as trying to target that range to get different. I'll toss out Justin's. I think he's a world class talent that we've seen starting to play well in stretches. I wouldn't be surprised at all. You know, I think he's got the tools to handle this golf course, so I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him, you know, flirting with contention come the weekend.
Hey, you stole my guy, Joe. I went to go somewhere else. Stole my guy. Let's see here. Kind of a long
just, shot. Just practicing for a fantasy football draft, AP. Sniping, baby.
Sniper.
Yeah, yeah. You just don't take Jared Goff. You'll be good. I'm going to go with a little I'm going to see Seamus Power. I feel like maybe just good ball striking here. Tee to green, make your par and go on. Good player. I almost pulled the trigger on my man here, but he's a Bermuda. He's a Bermuda green guy. He's not a bent green guy. It's just not his thing. But golly, he hits a long way. Okay. So, Joe, I'll let you go first here. Where's your heart at this week? Who's going to win this tournament?
Man, I think it's not at all original, but I think Scottie Scheffler's gonna win.
Oh, yep. Yep.
There's nothing cute there. I wish I could go out on a big limb and give you a cool name, but I think Scottie's just he's playing great, man. I think he's gonna get it done. Get another major.
Worry about you, Tambo.
I hope he goes wire to wire if he does it. Let's say that. That'll be the nice one to hit. But I would say two guys, because again, it's not going to be original. I actually think that it could end up being Rahm up top. So he's the guy I would say that's not original. It's just easy to pick, but it definitely feels like one of these guys up top does it. But it would not surprise me, just to say it this way and add it on. I just feel like something, this is where your heart's at. So you got to go with it. People will probably not love this, but DJ just seems too good, man. At 8,300, he's been so good at US Opens. He's got to be a little bit fired up with everything that's been going on in the game and, you know, watching Brooks go get one and do all that. Like, I just feel like he can definitely do it. It just depends on what DJ shows up. But in general, I'm gonna say DJ, and he's 8,300. So the great news is on DraftKings, you don't need that. But if you want to go with it, I definitely like DJ down there. Rahm is my favorite up top, though.
Yeah, I think me and Joe are kind of on the same level. I just think that Scheffler's just going to be boringly get it done and win this thing. You know, like I'm with you, Tim. 67 the first round. What's that?
Well, I was gonna say, let me take over the hosting for one second. If he doesn't, give me this one. If Scottie doesn't do it, then who do you got? You got to pick a winner outside of Scottie. Let's say the putter doesn't come together again. He does his little T12 thing and was right there in the mix again. But who do you think? Because it's the US Open, right? It's so hard to. It's like, it feels like the smallest group ever of guys that can actually win it. So would you stick up top with like a Rahm or Brooks, or is there anybody down the board that you could see actually pulling this thing off, AP?
I mean, I feel like Xander's like pretty much,
yeah,
in my brain, like a top, like a no brainer top 10. I feel like Victor's probably like a no brainer top 12. I feel like, if I'm splashing around and just going to throw some money in there and trying to draw something nice back, it's going to be, you know, throwing some dime on JT and DJ, and nice. Because they're champions and they got decent odds. So my extra question was this week is this, there always seems to stir up some kind of no name or a vet that comes out of the woodwork and is right down there to the wire, may not win. Do we see anybody doing that this week? Phil shot what, 64, 65 on Sunday at the Masters to finish what, third alone. Joe, is there anybody this week going to either come out of nowhere or a vet just come in there and play well all week?
Yeah, I mean, we know it's going to happen. It's just can we find that guy right? Already brought up Sam Bennett and Gordon Sargent. I like those young guys kind of as wild cards. Vet, just kind of a There's a couple there, man. There again in that low 7K range is that's an area I've been trying to target. Just a couple of tried and true tour vets. Harris English, would not be a surprise to see him play well. We've seen it happen in spurts. Not fully all the way back from hip injury, but we've seen him play well at different times this year. And then Sepp Straka, man, I think he's kind of a cool little dark horse. That you can fire away with there at 7,100. I like both those guys. So I'd say Harris English and Sepp Straka, and then kind of the two young guys down at the bottom.
But you, Tambo?
I got one for you. If I'm going Spain up top, John Rahm, I got one guy right at 7K, and it's Sergio. Man, people might forget this guy had to grind his way in. He had to grind the qualifier himself to get in this. He's pissed off. He's coming in ready. He wants to get this job done. All the talk of guys like Rory saying you can't be on the Ryder Cup team, and it makes sense that those guys went to live, can't come back and be on it. So, man, he is fired up. He's actually been pretty good at U.S. Opens in the past, dating back a little bit, 6-7 years. But in general, it's a vet we're picking here. I'm just saying he could definitely find his way through. Winning that Q to get in takes enough heart that you got to find your way through that. So for him – being a little bit ready, a little bit more pumped up, I think it's Sergio for me, right at 7,000. I like it.
Love Sergio. Sweet Joe.
I love it. That's why we have Tambo on the show for these calls right here.
Sergio shoots plus 10 on day one. But either way, I think it's to me, it's like the perfect answer. I think that's the one.
Yeah, man. I love that. I don't know if you saw it, Tambo. I think it was Scott Harrington. It's kind of like one of these Corn Ferry kind of journeyman PGA Tour guys, but I think it was Scott Harrington that played with Sergio in the qualifying. Mm-hmm. And he said that he's never played with anybody that hit it any better than Sergio in U.S. Open qualifying.
I forgot who said it, but I did see that. And then somebody else said that. I forget who else was at that same event. So I brought it up. I forgot the quote, but they said he wanted it so bad. They said, like, you could have just seen it in his eyes. Like, he was not going out of there without getting this cue. And it's awesome about golf, but I love it. Like, they control it. They go out, they hit their own shot. Like in DFS, I want to win every Q and get into the mega tournament and do all this too. But you can only put your lineup in, you control that, and then hope that some things break your way there. You still need stuff to break your way, but he's in full control. And whoever it was, I forget, also said he's never seen somebody want it so bad. And I think that is what it is, a little bit of a chip on his shoulder right now. 7K, man, I got no problem going to Sergio down there at the bottom. So I think he's another interesting play in that lower. Again, the lower 7Ks with no ownership. This is where I think you're going to find your winners. So I like this for the setup for the week. It will work pretty well.
Yeah, I've got a buddy, Gandy, who's been on the show a couple of times, and he sponsors the show some, but he played several rounds or a few rounds with him back in old U.S. Open qualifiers and stuff like that, and just says absolute stripe show. 5 irons and 4 irons and 6 irons just on a freaking string. But yeah, love Sergio this week. I'll throw another one out there. Hit the driver good, put chips it extremely well. Stewart Cink, third place finish in the crazy U.S. Open where we went to the 18-hole playoff, and then the British Open champion. He played really good, I think, down at Hawks Ridge. I think maybe he played in Ohio. I can't remember, but he plays a lot of golf anyway. Seems hadn't had his best stuff in the last 18 months, but putts it well, chips it well, hits the driver well. That fits my storyline I went with from the beginning of the show. That's my bet. I do like the young guns. They're going to be a force to reckon with pretty soon, along with some other guys in the SEC that's ridiculous right now. So, by the way, our kid from our club played in the Canadian Open this week. Missed the cut, shot 5 over. But he got in up there on the qualifier, then he went to the U.S. Open second stage up there and, shot like 2 under or something. But, he's
– not easy, man. It's definitely not easy to get into these things.
No, he shot 5 over, 3 over, 2 over. Does that sound right, Joe? He shot.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
he shot 5 over, missed the cut.
Yeah, he played in Raleigh 2 weeks ago and shot like 4 over the first day, and then had it like 4 under the second day, and made a couple bogeys coming in, but missed the cut. But he finished like top. He finished 12th in Knoxville and Corn Ferry, so he's a good player. He's only 2 years out, and he was 1 year too late for the PGA University, unfortunately. He was a COVID COVID kid. So as far as college goes, so he graduated 1 year too early, honestly, he's a good player, won a couple of college tournaments in the SEC, All-American 2 or 3 years. He's a stud. Ryan Hall, keep on the way for that. Ryan Hall is the name from our club. Anyway, Tambo, appreciate it. Joe, y'all got anything else you want to say? Because I think we've said everything we can about this thing. Let's go watch the 123rd playing of the U.S. Open at the L.A. Country Club. I'll leave you with a thought here on the way out, Tambo, and this is just a random thought of mine I've had. I would love to see U.S. Opens be all public courses and PJ Championships be the country clubs. I don't know why. I think that would be so like a neat storyline, but these old clubs are never going to let that happen.
Yeah. I don't think they would, but I'd say this all the time. As much as, again, the Masters, it's tradition, so I get that. It's a lot of fun. You make it almost now into like – it's like our Super Bowl in the sense that, you know, people have Super Bowl parties. We can have a Masters party. It's great. I mean, you can do it for any major if you want. If you're that big into golf like we are, I'll throw a party anytime for these events. But there's the tradition with that. The PGA Championship, it's on the bottom of everybody's list. Even though it's sneaky good every single year, somehow it's still obviously on the bottom. Everyone will tell you that. The Open – is fun because it's late night. You're staying up late. It's tradition of watching that and waking up to it and all seeing what happened, all these things. But man, I love the U.S. Open. And that's coming from a Canadian. So it's just wild. But I just, this event always gets me hyped up. I just love the atmosphere of it. It's really tough. The USGA stuff being involved, all this just different, just every angle to it. I get really into this one. I think it's awesome. It's Father's Day weekend. This weekend, maybe there's some positive vibes there that'll flow over, good mojo. So Millie Makers, great event, another major. I'm just super excited for this week. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I appreciate you as always.
Yeah, as always, I'm Andrew Putters. That's Joe Nicely. Tambo, thanks for coming on. You have and rotoballer.com. Thank you for everything you do for us. Best place in the world for your fantasy needs. Ship It Nation, brand new thing with Tambo. Check it out on his Twitter. What, toe tagging Tambo?
You got it.
Right? That's right.
Yeah.
That must have been one heck of a night picking that one. This is the Turn Golf Podcast. Appreciate you guys.
Already here, thinking of the lake. It's gonna drive me. It's gonna drive me.